Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Combine work stress, lack of sleep, substance use, and anxiety, and what you get is a perfect storm. Joseph Lekas of Palm Ghosts found out the worst possible way that his busy life in the music business as a booker and promoter was causing his anxiety to skyrocket. Battling health anxiety, hypochondria, social anxiety, panic attacks, and eventually agoraphobia, Joseph reached a point where he just couldn't function anymore. He had finally hit a wall. After meeting with a psychiatrist, courses on mindfulness and cognitive behavioral therapy helped him slowly dig his way out. But more than anything else, he needed to get back to making his own music. He needed to put his feelings and thoughts into a creative outlet instead of letting them spin inside of his head. Joseph is a prolific songwriter, and once he got down to it, he wrote and recorded albums and albums of material, currently with another 70 songs in the mix. Do the right things and everything will be okay. It's never as simple as that. Joseph's anxiety and depression will always be with him, but it's how he manages them that matters the most.
My name is Joseph Lekas, and I play in the band Palm Ghosts out of Nashville, Tennessee. I've been playing music since I was, a child. I would run around the house playing music all the time, just picking up. My grandfather was a mandolin player. I grew up in New Jersey, and I would always pick up the mandolins and pretend that they were electric guitars. Started playing guitar at 13 years old, seriously. Started off with Metallica and metal, and then I got into punk rock, Misfits, GBH, and stuff like that. Also, when I was a kid, it was hair metal and all that stuff. Got into like hardcore and indie rock, and I've been playing now for years and years. And when I was in my 20s, I moved to Philadelphia and started playing in the Philadelphia scene for years. And then I started booking my bands around Philly. Was pretty successful at that, booking touring bands with us. Ended up getting a job as a talent buyer in Philadelphia, booking Khyber and North Star Bar, which were pretty big bars back in the early aughts. Playing music, I always did through the entire thing, but I became entrenched in kind of the business of it, and it was pretty stressful. I basically ran the calendar for two clubs 7 nights a week and also tried to play music in different bands and tour whenever I could. Built that up to a festival type situation in Philadelphia. And then it was a lot of stress. It was like 300 artists and there was a film component and we had financial backers. The first year went pretty well, even though it was really stressed out. And I was living in clubs every night, drinking from 6 o'clock till 4 in the morning, like every night. It's just that world. And then the second year we did the festival, we had pretty good financial backing in Philadelphia. And all the other promoters in Philly kind of went against it in a way because we were independent. We lost some money on that second festival. I had basically built this career as a booker. And at one point I was booking 5 clubs in Philly. I was just burning the candle at both ends. And then the festival was done and I went from 24/7 spreadsheets running out to clubs, talking to everybody, to like nothing, just crickets. And I hit a wall and I basically started alone with my thoughts. I've always been a nervous kid. I always had issues with health anxiety. I've always been a hypochondriac. all through my life. And I remember being a 7-year-old kid thinking I was dying of something. And so that was always kind of a thing, like this obsession with every little thing is a health issue. It was always like some sort of terminal neurological illness or something was always plaguing me. It was miserable. And it would go from one thing to the next, to the next. So once this festival ended and I had a lot of time on my hands, I just lost it. I started the second festival. It was starting to begin. I didn't want to go to some of the events. We had a big outdoor event with like 10 bands all day long as part of this. I remember sitting on my car on Girard Avenue in Philly, just sitting there for an hour, shaking and not wanting to go talk to people. As soon as I came onto the grounds and people came up to me and asked me questions, I like disappeared into the bathroom and I would have just full on panic attacks. I didn't know they were panic attacks. I thought I was dying again of some sort of cardiovascular disease, something. It was just a perfect storm of substances all the time and no sleep. And I would smoke 2 packs of cigarettes. I couldn't take it anymore. So every time I'd go into public, I'd have to run to a bathroom and like splash my face with cold water. I started seeing like visual things. I'd go into a grocery store and the whole place would be like waves. It was just wild. Twitches all over my body, like every single thing. So then I came to a point where I was basically on the couch, from a guy who would go out 7 nights a week to being on a couch. My wife would come home from work. I could barely talk without crying. I'd have to shoot 2 shots of whiskey to even get words out. I remember watching Breaking Bad during this entire thing too, which I don't think was a really good idea at the same time.
And so it became, it sounds like, where you were housebound and going from a million things at once to being just incapacitated.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't do anything. I didn't want to go out and I played one gig in that time. And I remember seeing photos of myself from there and it was just sunken in eyes and it was just horrendous. And my wife's like, we need to get you some help, figure out what's going on. So I went to a psychiatrist. He basically said, well, you could put you on Zoloft or you could try to do it another way and figure this out. But what you have is clinical anxiety and depression. I knew I was always anxious. I knew I always had anxiety, but not to that level where it was non-functional. So then I was like, okay, well, this makes sense now. It was a little clearer, but still, I still couldn't function. So I started going to talk therapy. That helped a lot. And then I started doing a mindfulness-based stress reduction course that lasted, I think it was 8 weeks or something. It was one of those really intensive ones. Between that and the talk therapy, I slowly dug myself out. I didn't start taking the drugs, the SSRIs. I just wanted to try to do it that way. And it was a lot slower that way, but I just kind of slowly built my way out of that. And then I started getting back into music. So I had no music business stuff happening at all. I was kind of clear of that world and I could go and really start to mess around in a studio that I have in Philadelphia. It was a rehearsal studio, but there was a little Pro Tools set up in one of the rooms. And I would just spend all my time there working on music. And that was like a drug. It was like it kept my attention on something. It was meditative every day. And I got to work on being creative things. So it was always, I could put something into the world that I was proud of. And I wasn't planning on doing it as a band type situation at that point. It was more of just a therapeutic thing. And let's get this going and like, you know, just be creative again. And between that, the meditation and the talk therapy and the stuff that I learned about, like, first there's a thought and then there's a physical reaction that you've caused with the thought, but you just don't know you've done it. And then when you start tracing back your thoughts, you're like, oh, I thought that horrible thought. And now here I am feeling this way. And I did it to myself. I just didn't know how much your mind could control your body. Like, you can do a million things to your body that are scary that I don't think people understand. They think mind and body is separate. It's shocking. And when you have a health phobia your whole life, it's really scary because every little change in the wind makes you say, what was that? That feels weird. Why is that? And I still am like that. I always have to be on top of that.
People talk about having mental breakdowns, nervous breakdowns. The key word is breakdown. And hitting up against that wall that you talked about with a really stressful life situation, a really stressful job, an all-encompassing career. But there is this idea of it being not so much a breakdown, but a breakthrough. You know, that wall has to break and you have to come out of it. That's been something that I've really thought a lot about and came up in the Scream Therapy book with one of the people I talked to, is Could it be that this is the start of something better rather than worse, and then being stuck on the couch and being in horrible depression, which I'm very familiar with as well, but eventually coming through it. And it seems like finding the joy again was for you a lot to do with getting back to the music and away from all the other trappings of music.
For sure. Yeah. Away from the business of it, mostly. Any modern musician, there's a lot of business involved with it. But if you're doing it for yourself, it's tough. My seasonal depression, I think, is pretty bad. I can't compare it to others. But every January, it takes me forever to get out of it and say, what am I doing again? Like, do I have to start booking shows again and all the other things that go with it? The only thing I never feel that way about is recording, because I spend 5, 6, 7 hours a day in my studio. I'm in it right now recording. So to me, I always look at it like that always is wonderful. And it's a thing that keeps me going, keeps me stable in a lot of ways. Like I said, I always have to fight every day through anxiety. My brain just goes to worst case scenario all the time. It's just no way to avoid it. And I just know it. And I try to control it before it snowballs. It does snowball. I'll fixate on one thing, physical ailment or something, and then I'll think the worst case scenario about that ailment. And then that obsessive thinking, because I was always OCD too. They're all hand in hand. Every level of anxiety, you come with a depression, and then there's a lot of stuff that you do that's almost like a mania type situation where worked really hard and like I did with the festival. My brain was just all the time with it. And then it was a complete shutdown. And I lost that. So there's gears where I jump from thing to thing. It's a mess. It's always a mess.
So one of the big things about living with depression is it can be really hard to enjoy the things that you used to enjoy or the things that you love the most. And so there have been times in my life where music and writing have been like not even appealing at all to me. You said that you were having those really dark, dark days of depression. And where was that turning point to get back to the music?
I mean, while I was doing a lot of the music business work, I wasn't playing music much. I had a band that I'd get together with friends and we'd, you know, it was an opportunity to just play some music, but it wasn't serious at all. There was just not enough time. You're out at a club until, you know, 5 in the morning, you'd sleep till noon, and then you're back on the train in a couple hours. And it's not much of a life unless you like to be on tour all the time. It's like being in your own city on tour all the time. Once I had that 6 months on the couch and just separated myself from all that again, just a natural inclination for me is to always go back to writing music. I asked a guy that was at the studio, could you show me how to use Pro Tools? I've never used it. I just want to learn how to record myself. And that was the big, big step. Learning that was kind of going back to school for me a little bit, just obsessing about that and going into like, you know, YouTube and learning about all that and getting better and better at that and hearing like how the instruments work together. So that was a really good thing, the ability to empower myself to be able to record everything. I could just go and say like, come on in the studio and I could do it myself. I didn't have to go into it and spend a bunch of money and look at a clock. And it just snowballed from there. It became like everything else in my life. I get really obsessed about things, and some of this obsessions are good, like creativity. If I don't do creative stuff for just say a couple weeks or a week, which is unheard of these days, if it happens, I start to get the old patterns come back in again. I just fall into these horrible thought patterns and they start to manifest into physical things and off to the races in a bad way.
And you took the mindfulness course, so I'm sure you can correlate the mindfulness exercises with the music, playing it, recording it, creating it, another form of mindfulness.
I mean, the mindfulness helps a lot too. I was always a nervous flyer my whole life, really hated airplanes. I don't let it stop me anymore. On travel days like that, I go into a meditative state where I'll close my eyes in this level of like half sleep, half wakefulness. I'll be on an 8-hour flight. I'll just have my eyes closed. I won't be sleeping, but I'll just be breathing. It's just a state I get into. And that's what mindfulness has shown me with the meditation. But I don't have a practice every day. It's kind of only when I need it at this point. I should have a practice every day. I think it would keep me a lot more even keeled and I should get back into it. I always think I get anxious about getting back into meditation.
anxiousness upon anxiousness.
Yeah, exactly.
Being in the studio for long periods of time becomes, I guess, very insular for you and maybe in some ways kind of, I won't say lonely, but solitary for sure. So when you're done doing that for hours upon hours, what's it like going back into the outside world?
It's actually not so weird anymore. I had a lot of social anxiety when I was younger. I would pound drinks to get through that. I would be the guy that would be at the bar and I've had six and it's the first half hour kind of situation. I think age has kind of made me less worried about that. So I can spend a lot of time by myself and then go out and go see a band and hang with friends and not need to self-medicate to get through that anymore. Maybe it's a confidence that's just over time. Moving from Philly to Nashville was a big thing. It's like a lot more of a suburban living type situation. I lived in Fishtown in the city for years, and there's a lot going on. Here, it's a lot quieter and a lot kind of a mellow setting. So a little bit of all of that helps. But yeah, I don't have that need to pound drinks to talk to someone anymore like I used to have to. That's a horrendous situation to be in.
So you did Palm Ghosts for quite a while as a solo project. And then at one point you brought in some other folks to play with.
Yeah.
What shifted when that happened, either the creative process or even with your mental health of having people around, changed it?
Yeah. I mean, I never thought I'd be doing a whole live thing again after I moved here. So it was just a studio type project. I just had this idea. I wanted to put a band together and we tour like we're like every other weekend and then we'll do like a 2-week thing or we'll just do whatever opportunities we get to do, but we're constantly touring. We tour as much as pretty big bands. It's just spread out throughout the year. Nashville makes it easy, but I think just feeling better about playing. And so I was like, okay, now I feel pretty confident about the music. Now I want to be able to feel confident about playing live. Because I remember always listening to recordings of myself when I was younger going, oh my God, because it wasn't about the music as much then. I mean, I always loved the music, but it was more about the party. So you just party and you tour and you just, you weren't thinking about practicing on your own, about singing. So now like I'll practice a bunch by myself. We'll go out. I'll really work on different things. And then I wanted to perfect the live thing as much as possible. So that's been a great thing too. Just like putting all of our effort into making good music that we think and interesting music without any outside influences. And then just booking ourselves to play, building friendships and things throughout the country. It's just a great thing. I feel like there's a community that we've built of people that we're friends with wherever we go now. We're not just the touring band that doesn't talk to the locals and then sleeps in a hotel. It's like we know people that come out in all the cities and it's a great feeling. So like I'm not a religious guy at all. So there's no church that I go to. So that's the closest thing to a church that I have. The ethics of DIY and, you know, reading Our Band Could Be Your Life and that whole world of like, you book it, you have these communities, and it's kind of like that. If you're not with a bigger label or big agencies and stuff, you exist in those communities and they're still there and they're great. And I love that about it.
When you think back to the times that you were afraid to go to the house, that you had to run into bathrooms in public to regain your composure, I know for me, I look back on a lot of things before I was diagnosed bipolar, and it's obviously painful to think back, but how do you use those memories, those experiences now to carry on with what you're doing? Is it a safety mechanism to look back and say, okay, that's what it used to be, and now here I am now?
No, I don't want to do that because I know I could be right back in that at any given moment. So I don't want to really think about that because then I'll think about the patterns and the feelings that I had, and they may creep back in. So how I use that is if I feel like an anxiety coming on, if I didn't get enough sleep or if I drink too much coffee, there's a line of with caffeine where I hit a point and I'm just like, oh, okay, I'm feeling whatever. When I start obsessing over seasonal allergies, like right now my ears are popping like crazy and I'm like, oh, am I going deaf? You know, every year it's something like that. I just think back and go, okay, you had that thought. You're having these feelings, these sensations. My wife is very calming, I must say too. She's always just like, I'm like, this is happening. And she's like, just wait a couple days. And then if it's still there, we'll go check it out. She knows how to deal with that with me very naturally. I'll get those sensations and I'll go to the worst case scenario. And I'll go, wait a second. You just had that thought, that worst case scenario thought. You're going to start feeling symptoms of that pretty soon. And when you do, recognize that it was your thought that caused that symptom. And it does. I've felt like some horrible symptom that wouldn't go away. And then I'd read something online because I don't go, what's the worst case scenario online? I stopped researching things online. That's
Dr. Google.
Could something like this cause that? And then I go, oh, yeah. And then instantly it's like the next day I don't have the symptoms anymore. So I that much complete control over my brain. So I use those obsessive thoughts and I go, stop. This is what it is. It usually goes away. And if it doesn't, then I'm like, okay, then there's something I got to go check out or whatever. It's almost like I'll get bad medical news and that won't be as bad because I wasn't obsessing about it. I don't know if that makes any sense. Like, you have really high blood pressure. Well, I wasn't feeling that. So, okay, well, tell me what that is. Like, how do I take care of that? Or it's like, if I was obsessing about it, I think I'm dying of something else. And they say, well, you should be worried about this, but you're worried about this. That doesn't exist. It's much worse. Worry about this. Very odd.
The worst case scenario idea is part of the cognitive behavioral therapy. I'm not sure if you've done much of that study, but yep. The idea of black and white thinking and checking the facts and all those things, it's really important tools to have. But I think for a lot of folks, it's not very instinctual at all. So because of whole flight and flight. And so to learn that, to go against those instincts of, oh my God, what's happening? Smoke alarm, fire.
Yep.
So it's great to hear you talk about that worst case scenario exercise. It's very helpful.
The therapist would say, they would put a rubber band on your wrist, and the moment you'd have the thought, you snap the rubber band. It'll be like a thing that you do to mark that horrible thought that you're having. And then when the symptom or the anxiety comes up, you go, oh, it was because of that thought. So cognitive behavioral therapy is incredible in that way. It really gives you insight into how you ruminate on these things.
What does your life look like moving forward? What have you learned? What are some of the things that you can make sure that you're not going to slip back into? You know, you changed your career, which was probably necessary at the time. Other than that, what are you doing to take care of yourself?
I mean, I walk miles every day. There's a park near here in Nashville. I came back from my walk just a little while ago, and it's beautiful. It's just a wooded park, and it has hills and a bridge. And so I do that every day, or I'll go on an elliptical. Like, that's important too. Just working out, keeping your body moving, keeps your mind going. I get sleep no matter what. That's really important. If I don't get enough sleep, I suffer instantly. Like, it goes right back into really bad feelings. So I sleep every day. I spend time working on music, but also know when I'm locking myself too much in a space and say, okay, it's time to get out, go to the post office, go to the grocery store, go have a coffee with a friend, go talk to your wife. She works at home as well. I try to control, like, substances. I've never been into drugs that much. Drinking was always a huge thing. I was always like prided myself on being this, like, I could drink anybody under the table back in my younger years. Now I'll have a couple beers on occasion, or I'll have a glass of wine and I'm fine with it. I don't have this obsession anymore to get messed up. Or I think that was a lot to do with the medicating of myself so I could be in public and feel normal, which I didn't know at the time. Now I look back and say, that's why I was drinking so much. When you're younger, it becomes energy where you want to go find the next party. Now it just puts me to sleep after a certain amount. So I'm just like, oh, I'll have a beer. I enjoy it. I have a glass of wine. Sometimes my wife's like, you want to have a glass? I'm like, I don't want any. Like, my relationship's a lot better with that. But if I'm on tour and like we've hung with friends and we're drinking a little bit more than usual, that'll be a thing that comes on and I'll feel anxious. And I'm like, okay, you need to stop, slow down with that. I just kind of watch all these little things that could affect my mood, sleep, and all that stuff, and try to keep those under control and try to balance my day where I'm not obsessing over a job. I freelance a lot doing little things. Like, I'll book a few shows here and there. I'll do the music thing all the time. I'll help other people book tours. All those little things aren't one thing that takes my entire day up where I'm stressed or I'm trying to perform for somebody. I need to be a kind of person that doesn't do that. I can't work one of those. I can't work for other people. I just can't. In a 9-to-5 situation, I just can't do it. Tried it, had anxiety from it. Yeah. So I just know the things that affect me. Just know those things.
I always say to folks that my full-time job is taking care of my health.
Yeah.
Whatever else I can fit 100%. In there is fine, but that's my priority. Is there a Palm Ghost song that you could hand to someone and say, hey, here's my story. This is me.
That's interesting. I mean, the first record doesn't sound like anything that we do now, so it would be a weird thing to tell someone to listen to that, but that was the anxiety record. If you want to know what my brain was going through at full bore anxiety craziness, it sounds very calm. Listen to the record. It's kind of like Iron and Wine, kind of folky, but it was me at clinical anxiety. But the mood of the band is a dark thing. I don't like really happy, major sounding music often. So maybe just the entire aesthetic of the band, even from that first record, being minor and darker, and that might be how it manifests. I just don't like things to be perfect and happy, and that's why I don't like a lot of pop music. To me, it sounds just fake. It just sounds like something that, who's like that? Not me, you know what I mean? I look at the dark side of everything slightly, you know?
Well, from the dark comes the light, I guess.
For sure.
That was my conversation with Joseph Lekas from Palm Ghosts, palmghosts.net. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out the newly opened store at screentherapyhq.com/store. And for even more designs, check out Screen Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting, it's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.